Welcome to the Saturday Frights Podcast. I am the Projectionist, your co-host for this radio program. Now, come join your host, Vic Sage, as we enter the vault to once again discuss retro horror films and television programs.
Thank you, friends, for joining us once again for a Saturday Frights Matinee podcast. On this show, I'm going to be discussing the first segment of the just-released episode for Shudder's Creepshow TV series. Before I dive into all of that, there's a couple things I want to talk about. One, we're recording in the Projectionist Wing of the Vault today. If you frequent my co-host's Facebook page, you will know that a little over a week ago, he took a vacation back to Haddonfield, to his old stomping grounds at the Haunted Drive-In. That isn't all that odd, as he's been known to do something like this a couple times a year, generally to pick up some films for the Vault collection. Of course, sometimes I think he's up to something more nefarious. I mean, he used to have an assistant named Carl that we never hear about anymore. That's beside the point, though. The thing is, we haven't heard anything since he left. He borrowed the Tucker 48 from the Vault garage. The gang in Q Branch have all the vehicles fitted with wireless communications, but he hasn't answered any of our calls. Nothing. Honestly, I'm kind of worried. Look, the Projectionist is creepy, downright weird, and can be actually terrifying at times, but he's still my friend. Rockford J, showing he has the patience of Job, left a couple days ago to see if everything's okay at the Haunted Drive-In. Actually, he should have already gotten there. I bring all of this up because I will be your sole host for this podcast. At the very least, we had the soothing fireplace down here in the Projectionist wing of the vault. A nice change of pace from the humming machinery of the control room, wouldn't you say? Actually, if the Projectionist is somehow listening to this podcast, I know he would be saying that after I told you I would be the sole host, you would have turned off this episode. Now, there is one other bit of news. If you're a longtime listener to the show or frequently visited the Retroist, you know that he has decided to change direction on his website, focusing it more on his vision like it was over a decade ago. So he's retired the site for the time being. I doubt it will be for very long, but that necessitated my creating a spot on the internet for not just my own podcasts, but a place to continue to share my love of things retro and pop culture related, with the help of the likes of Allison Venizio Preston, Earl Green, Rockford J, Rob O'Hara, IC Robots, and others. We have a new site. You can visit it daily for retro-related fun at www.popculturetrorama.com. Now then, with all of that out of the way, I suppose it's time to talk about Grey Matter, the first offering from Shudder's Creepshow. Each episode looks to be presenting two stories for each of the six episodes, which I do believe in a bit of awesomeness that the final episode will be airing on Halloween night. Appropriate for Creepshow. I obviously have incredibly fond memories of watching 1982's Creepshow. The Projectionist and myself did a special 5-episode breakdown of that iconic tribute to the EC Comics of old by George A. Romero and Stephen King. If memory serves correctly, that began on episode 50 of this podcast. So, you can imagine I was pretty excited when it was announced back in July of 2018 that not only were we getting a Creepshow TV series, but it was going to be produced by Greg Nicotero. Considering he got his start with Romero in 1985's masterpiece Day of the Dead and helped to co-found KMBFX, it seemed like that was the perfect person to head this new show. In fact, in an interview with Entertainment Weekly in July of this year, he stated, quote, "I was very ambitious and attacked Creepshow with a lot of tenacity. We were set to do 6 episodes, but I insisted that we shoot 12 stories in 6 episodes because I wanted that Creepshow feel. So, we ended up having to create an entirely new universe, with an entirely new cast, every 3.5 days. Ugh. Every night I couldn't sleep, because I was trying to figure out how we were going to do it. It was crazy. It was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Now that I'm seeing it coming together and putting all the icing on the cake, it's pretty spectacular. End quote. I will naturally provide a link to that Entertainment Weekly interview on the Pop Culture Retrorama site. The interview with Greg Nicotero by Clark Collis gives you a pretty nice insight into what Nicotero envisions for the series. Definitely worth taking the time to read. Very slowly, we started to get more information. It was a continuation of the first two films. So, the character of the Creep would act as hosts of sorts at the beginning and ending of the segments. Plus, Stephen King's stories would be adapted once again. But this time, so would other well-regarded authors and artists, like Joe R. Lansdale, Bruce Jones, Christopher Buhlmann, Josh Malerman, Joe Hill, John Skip, and Dory Miller. In addition, there would be four stories that are original screenplays for Creepshow. And writers on those stories include Paul Dini and Stephen Langford, John Esposito, Rob Schrab, and John Harrison, as well as Greg Nicotero, among others, of course. I definitely think that, unlike 1982's Creepshow, where it leaned more towards the Tales from the Crypt comics, where a person in the wrong got their just reward, this new Creepshow series has a anything-goes attitude. In addition, considering some of the writers I mentioned, I'm willing to bet there might be some tonal differences in the segments of the show as well. It was earlier this year when names started to be dropped on who would be appearing in the Creepshow series, and it was enough to make me start chomping at the bit to finally get to see the first episode. You had Adrian Barbeau, Jeffrey Combs, Tobin Bell, Bruce Davison, Giancarlo Esposito, Dana Gould, and Tricia Helfer, to name a few. That is a pretty impressive list of actors for this series, and that isn't even counting the likes of the directors picked to tackle Creepshow. David Bruckner, Tom Savini, yes, the legendary Tom Savini, Roxanne Benjamin, and even Greg Nicotero himself. I think it's quite fair to say that many of us Fright fans were pretty excited about what we were hearing concerning this new Creepshow series. Then the trailer hit in July, and it just stoked the fires of anticipation. They were going with practical effects, at least on the Creep himself, and we were able to see a few seconds of some of the upcoming episodes. Then finally, on the evening of September 26th, Shudder debuted the premiere episode of Creepshow, featuring Grey Matter as the first segment, followed by The House of the Head, which I will discuss on the next matinee episode. I plan on covering each of the shows. Hopefully, with the next go-around, it will include my co-hosts, too. With a synopsis for Grey Matter, I will be going into spoiler territory, as well as sharing my thoughts on the entire segment itself. But I will give you a fair warning beforehand. Okay, Grey Matter was directed by Greg Nicotero from a teleplay by Byron Willinger and Philip DeBlasi. The latter was one of the writers for 2018's The Commuter, starring Liam Neeson. Byron and Philip both came up with a story for that particular action film. Grey Matter was a short story written by Stephen King, and appeared originally in a 1973 issue of Cavalier magazine. Although, I first encountered it, probably like many of you, in his excellent collection of short stories entitled Night Shift, which, by the way, was first published in hardcover form in 1978. Although I read the paperback version a few years later thanks to my local library. And, to be totally honest, the stories I Am the Doorway, Battlegrounds, Trucks, and Children of the Corn were the ones that stuck out the most when I first read the collection. Over the years, though, I have come to appreciate Grey Matter a little more, especially as there's some elements in it that are very Lovecraftian in nature. And with that, I think it's about time we begin the synopsis discussion, which we will begin right after this snippet of the Creepshow series theme by Tyler Bates and Timothy Williams. Bates is an incredibly well-known composer, having worked on everything from Zack Snyder's film adaptations of 300 and Watchmen to John Wick 3, Parabellum. Timothy Williams just recently worked on David Yarovesky's horror-themed supervillain origin film, Brightburn. I really thought that the theme for Shudder's Creepshow was well done. The score for Grey Matter was provided by Christopher Drake. Now, let's talk about the first episode of Creepshow and Grey Matter. First of all, I mean, right off the bat, we get a great Easter egg, as we are introduced to the creep, who is busy removing the chains and cracking open a large wooden crate. Yes, the very same crate from the 1982 Creepshow film that should be the resting spot for Fluffy, that large ape-like creature with a voracious appetite and a mouth full of gleaming razor-sharp teeth. It appears that Fluffy has vacated his former crate, because now it's completely filled with Creepshow comic books. Something that the cackling creep finds quite amusing, as we are treated to a nice opening sequence. Part comic book illustrations that appear to be projected onto a CGI version of the creep. This new Creepshow series is definitely not shying away from the comic book aspects of the first two movies. As Grey Matter begins, we see comic book ads for past issues of Creepshow, and even mail-away offers for masks, some of which I believe are actually characters for upcoming segments of Creepshow. Another nod to the 1982 film can be found if you pay close attention or freeze frame the bottom of the mail-away offers, like P.O. Box 430 Verrill Way, as in Jordy Verrill from the Creepshow segment, The Lonesome Death of Jordy Verrill, the very segment that starred Stephen King as a country bumpkin who runs afoul of a meteorite that causes weeds and grass to take root and flourish on everything. There's a little of that in Grey Matter as well. As the story begins proper, courtesy of comic book panels and word balloons, as well as the narration from a radio, we learn that Hurricane Charlie is about to make landfall, and only the likes of Chief Connors, who is the sheriff of this slowly dying coastal town, and is about to have a whole lot more to worry about than the Category 4 hurricane barreling down on them. Chief Connors, by the way, is played by Saw's Tobin Bell, and he delivers a nice performance as a world-weary lawman, who, it sounds like, might know something is not kosher with their town. When we are first introduced to him, he's busy boarding up the windows of the little cafe owned by the kindly Dixie, played by Adrian Barbeau of John Carpenter's The Fog fame and Escape from New York, who happens to be sitting at a table with their friend Doc, who I do assume is a doctor, judging by some comments he makes later in the episode. Little asides to Chief. Doc is played by the always fantastic Giancarlo Esposito of AMC's Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. This quick introductory scene also lets the episode have fun with more Easter eggs. Some are incredibly obvious, like the large number of missing animal flyers. Some of the Legion of Pets include Cujo, in Church from Pet Sematary. Others, though, are going to require you to freeze frame. I have a feeling that these Creepshow segments were designed to benefit from watching multiple times, to catch all of the King references and nods to the past two films. It looks like the trio are planning on holding up in the cafe to wait out the worst of the storm, playing cards to pass the time. That is all interrupted, however, when young Timmy Grenadine, played by Christopher Nathan, barges into the cafe, the storm howling behind him. Chief and the others are quite surprised to see him, but it turns out he has been put in harm's way by his father to fetch a case of Harrow's Supreme Lager. It's pretty evident that Timmy has a lot on his mind, equal parts embarrassed and maybe fear. Dixie, as we later learn, acted as a tutor for Jimmy when he was younger, so it's obvious they have a special connection. As she's ringing up the case of beer, taking a moment to look on in disgust at the money that Timmy placed on the counter. It's got a dank-looking growth on it, and has some kind of slime that sticks to her fingers. It is she that is able to get Timmy to speak his mind, which is, there is something wrong with his father, and he doesn't want to go back home at all. Dixie tries to calm him down, letting him know that he can stay in the cafe with her, and has a word with both Chief and Doc, to get them to go investigate the matter of Timmy's father. When Chief Connors informs Timmy that he and Doc will take the Harrow's beer to his father, the teenager is quick to try and quash that idea. But with a slightly withering look from the sheriff, the young man quickly changes his tone, transforming into gratitude. Obviously, the trio of adults feel that maybe Timmy's father, Richie Grenadine is somehow abusing the boy. At the very least, it looks like the young man is malnourished. It's a small town. They know that Richie's father has a drinking problem, but they are also concerned about the man, which is why it makes sense that Chief Connors and the doc are the ones to go check up on him. Remember what I said about Chief Connors maybe knowing something is up with their little town? Just before the power goes out everywhere, and he and Doc head out into the storm, the sheriff tells his oldest friend something he remembers, which is triggered by the look on Timmy's face, as well as something his own father told him when he was a boy.
What do you think got that boy so scared?
I don't know. But I can tell you, I haven't seen a look like that since George Kelso.
George who?
George Kelso. Years ago, he saw something in the sewers that spooked the bejesus out of him.
Must have made landfall.
I remember something that my daddy used to say to me. He'd say, son, there are things in the corners of this world that if you look them right in the face, they'll drive you insane.
Real quick, the majority of gray matter is told in flashbacks. Timmy telling Dixie how a couple of years ago, things started to go bad for his father, after the young boy's mother died. The anchors of the episode are Adrian Barbeau and Christopher Nathan's performances. I'm bringing this up because in regards to screen time, Tobin Bell and Giancarlo Esposito's sole purpose in the segment is to bear witness to the horror that has taken place in the Grenadine apartment. As I mentioned a moment ago, these two actors are able to build some strong characters out of the littlest sides they have with each other. Gray Matter jumps from Timmy's narration to the investigation by Chief Connors and Doc, back and forth throughout the segment. In a nutshell, since Timmy's mother's passing, Richie, played by Jesse C. Boyd, quite frankly tries to find escape through not a bottle, but many, many cans of Haro's Supreme Lager, a cheap beer. Both Boyd and Nathan do a fine job of showing how the alcoholism is affecting their family. One result is the loss of work for Richie, who promises that he will stop drinking entirely, over and over again. Except, as we learn, thanks to drinking contests, which Richie is good at, that is how they are paying the bills and keeping their little apartment. Things really start to change, as Timmy explains it, after winning a big competition, and as his father is guzzling more Haro's Supreme, he cries out in pain, retching in the sink, but nothing will come out. Timmy rushes out of his room to check on his father, who is laughing over the sink after sticking two of his fingers into his mouth and revealing a bloody and greenish slime on his fingertips. I have the impression that Richie believes the universe is just dumping on him again, laughing at what he assumes is a medical condition. However, come morning, Timmy finds his father passed out on the floor, a spilled can of Haro's not far from hand. The young man picks it up, wincing at the smell from the beer can, stating, quote, I swear it smelled like something crawled in there and died, end quote. Things begin to snowball for Timmy and his father. Richie starts to become affected by light, ordering Timmy to cover up the windows with blankets. It gets so bad that the young man can't even use the lights in his room with the door closed, because it bothers his father so much. Worse, Richie doesn't move from his chair in the living room, watching TV all day and night, doing nothing but drinking more beer, sending Richie out to get more when he runs low. There has also been a change physically with his father. What at first looks to be bruising on the side of the man's face and arms, then becomes what appears to be an angry-looking rash, or perhaps something growing on his skin. Timmy explains to Dixie, who is obviously growing more and more concerned as he relates what he's been living through, that Richie had his son turn on all the heaters and even begin to warm up Haro's Supreme Lager in a pan on the stove so he could drink it. Which, in all honesty, I'm a lightweight when it comes to alcohol, but I don't think that is how you're supposed to drink beer, right? As Timmy tells it, a nasty surprise is waiting for him one day after school. He opens the door, and his father is sitting in that chair, completely wrapped up in the young man's blankets. He asks his son, in a gurgling voice, to turn on the lights. We see that some kind of horrible metamorphosis is taking place with Richie. His arm and hand appear worm-like, or maybe I should say, it resembles a wiggling tentacle. Slime covers the man from head to toe. But Richie mentions to his terrified son that it doesn't hurt, that it feels kind of nice. Timmy naturally wants to get Doc, but his father threatens to touch him, so he is infected as well if his son gets the town doctor. Dixie has to coax the almost crying young man to continue the rest of his story, which is that Timmy has been doing some very horrible things for the benefit of his father. Those missing animals? You can guess what horror Doc and Chief Connors stumble into when they enter the Grenadine apartment. Animal bones litter the kitchen floor, but it's what awaits them in the bathroom that is the worst. You see, children have gone missing in the town, too. Sadly for Doc and Chief, they are witness to the remains of Richie's new food of choice. And while Timmy is pleading with Dixie to understand that what he has done is all out of love for his father, including setting up the sheriff and Doc, that's when Richie makes his appearance, attacking the two men. Richie has grown in size, a gray-colored, bloated slug of the man he once was, dripping with slime and a jaw that has been extended so far it appears to have torn loose and hangs down to his chest. Chief Connors is quick to raise his pistol and begins to fire, but his gun and arm are sucked into Richie's body, and as the sheriff screams for help, Doc watches in horror as his friend and this monstrosity that was the Elder Grenadine fall to the floor. Connors is consumed, absorbed into the large mass. To the doctor's terror, moments before he flees the Grenadine residence, the gray lump of flesh splits in twain, becoming two separate entities, two ravenous monsters, and we see briefly the monster dividing again. At that, there is a quick jump back to the cafe, where we find Doc frantically running around gathering items, including a shotgun, while Timmy apologizes over and over again, in a state of shock of what the doctor told him and Dixie about the monster that Richie has become. Dixie, meanwhile, is in a state of panic of her own. Furiously using an adding machine, the poor woman is scared by her calculations that at the rate of its multiplying, it will take a mere 6 days before the monster that was Richie has consumed the entire world. Doc has a moment to register the horror of that statement, before the roof of the cafe is broken in and multiple gray arms reach down and yank the screaming man up, with Timmy and Dixie screaming on in horror as well. And we cut to black, which signals the end of the first Creepshow segment and the synopsis for Grey Matter. Okay, for the first segment, Grey Matter, in my personal opinion, mostly delivers. Case in point, the ending of the episode. It's a hard cut from the attack by Richie to the few minutes before Doc is grabbed. The entire running time for the episode is 45 minutes and some change, with the Grey Matter segment being about 24 minutes long, including opening theme and credits. I'm wondering, since Shudder is owned by AMC, if the plan isn't to at some point release it to AMC in syndication or something. I guess that is a drawn-out way of saying Grey Matter would have benefited from about 5 more minutes at the end. Having said that, while you do really need to pay attention to what is being said at the end of the episode, Greg Nicotero in particular does an incredible thing, visually. He uses the shadows of Doc and Timmy, obviously panicking in the cafe, to mimic the dividing of the monster, while Dixie is busy at the adding machine. Greg Nicotero really does a great job as director, which should go without saying, but that bit with the shadows really kind of took my breath away. There are a couple changes from the source material, which include the storm itself. In the original story, which being set in Maine, it is a blizzard that affects the town. Since Creepshow is filmed in Georgia, it had to be altered a little, and I agree a hurricane makes the most sense. Another important element that was changed is with Richard Grenadine. In the original story, he suffers an accident at the local mill, receiving a generous workers' compensation for his entire life in an effort to stop the man from hitting them with a lawsuit. Richie, in King's version of Grey Matter, most assuredly is found eating a cat by his son. But Timmy doesn't rather coldly send people to their death. In fact, in the original story, when he seeks refuge at the convenience store where the narrator and two other men are gathered, that is the last we hear of him. Don't get me wrong, I believe I understand why Byron and Philip changed Timmy to being the one to deliver the new food source to his father. Yes, he did it out of love, but it also makes it even more terrifying when you really start to think about it. Although, I think it also makes it rather hard to like Timmy. His reasoning is a little flawed, to say the least. So I'm curious as to why they just didn't stick with Richie being the one to do all the horrible things. I think it's time to wrap things up, friends. Gray Matter is a solid offering. Not perfect, but this straight-up horror segment shows promise for this new Creepshow series. It benefits from incredibly solid performances, especially with Barbeau, Esposito, and Bell, dark thrills that feature nearly all practical effects, and a good sign that the creep has some interesting tales to share with us in the month of October. Friends, I think that brings us to the end of our Saturday Frights matinee episode featuring Creepshow's Gray Matter. By the way, I'm not a spokesman for Shudder, but I would like to remind you that if you have been on the fence about getting the streaming service, it's only $5.99 a month, and Creepshow is the perfect reason to start subscribing. The music you heard at the beginning and ending of our podcast was provided by Peachy. My co-host, The Projectionist, has his own Facebook page, Projectionist Haunted Drive-In. I've been handling chores over there the last couple weeks since he's been missing, but generally, he would share old movie posters and newspaper advertisements throughout the week. As for myself, you can still find me posting a couple times a day on not just the Saturday Frights page, but the Diary of an Arcade Employee and Pop Culture Retrorama page too. I even managed to find time to share some things on the Retroist Clubhouse on Facebook now and again. Saturday Frights has an Instagram account, by the way. If you want to check it out, you can find it. It's simply Saturday_Frights. If you'd like to contact me personally with suggestions for future episodes, you can reach me at VicSagePopCulture@gmail.com. Of course, we owe a great deal of gratitude to the Retroist himself. Not just for originally hosting the podcast, but for allowing us, for nearly 10 years, to share our love of all things retro. If you like the show, consider subscribing and giving us a rating over on iTunes. Our past catalog of episodes is slowly coming back online, but you can still listen to the entire collection over on the Internet Archive. This has been a Pop Culture Retrorama podcast. Goodbye, and thanks for listening. The Saturday Frights podcast is not affiliated with or authorized by AMC, Shudder, Entertainment Weekly, or any of the businesses and individuals that have been mentioned in the show. All music and sound clips from Creepshow are the property of the respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. Audio clips are included for the purpose of review, criticism, and commentary only, and are not intended to infringe.